You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's been kind of hard recently to tell exactly what season we're in. The calendar says it's summer, and yet the weather keeps zigzagging back to what feels like early spring. But whatever the conditions, it's certainly time to get your plants in order. And here now to help us is our favorite horticulturist, Gerard Lordahl, the greening director of Grow NYC. It's always a pleasure to see you, Gerard.
Good to be here, Leonard.
And be sure to give us a call if you have any planting issues. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write in on our show page at WNYC.org. Also, you can tweet us at Leonard Lopate or find us on Facebook. Gerard, was this a rough winter for gardens with all the snow?
Well, I mean, we're all familiar with superstorms, microbursts, spring floods, heat waves, droughts, frost. I mean,
Arctic flow.
Gardeners, your listeners, we've all been kind of through the mill, if you would, regarding the natural weather and the things that we've been going through in the yard and in the garden, in the community gardens, on the terrace rooftops, etc. It's been pretty challenging since 2012, let's just say.
So what are the results? What are we seeing right now?
Well, what's happening now, right now, we've had some cool early spring temperatures, and your listeners will want to know that you may find some fruit delay on your tomatoes because we had that cold snap where in some counties it went down below 30. So there's a lack of fruit set on some of those crops like that are known to be warm season, like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. Because the temperature went below 55 degrees in the evening, some of the tomatoes, peppers, eggplants that you may have had out in the garden then will tend to abort their flower. And it will delay your fruit from progressing in the vegetable garden. So that's one indication.
What's happening is they're developing flowers, which eventually will develop into fruit.
Right.
But because it's suddenly very cold, the plant says, wait a minute, this is too early.
Exactly. And some of the counties north of us had frost in April early on. The year before that, typically as an educational organization, we tell our students that New York City has a frost-free date of about April 20th. However, in 2012, I believe it was April 21st, we had snow. So the weather is changing. The flooding has been a big issue. So if people go to our website, grownyc.org, you could get a free publication about resilient New York City gardens. And this teaches people about a rain garden. You might want to do a rain garden in your backyard, Leonard, where you build a garden that's a planted depression that is designed to absorb rainwater runoff from surfaces like paving and driveways. And we have a selection of plants like butterfly weed or bee balm or marsh marigold. These are plants that could take flooding and also drought at the same time. And if you do have a problem with flooding on your property, think about installing a rain garden, and our brochure on our website is free, and it could tell you how to build a rain garden or a bioswale.
Did the cold weather damage perennials?
There was a lot of damage. Looking around the city, we're getting a lot of calls. People have their perennials have been uplifted from the extended cold and the freezing and thawing, and there was quite a bit of damage in the perennial garden because of the roots that were exposed to those long periods of freezing temperature. Also, a number of people have called in about their fig trees. Fig trees generally don't grow in this area far north, and there's a lot of damage for people, particularly who didn't prune their fig trees in the fall. They've suffered a lot of damage. I noticed that people who pruned them last fall didn't get quite as much damage on their figs.
Is there a positive side? Does the cold kill off pests?
That is a positive side. You will find that the cold spring that we have now, you're not getting the mosquitoes and the insects as quickly, although we have had some high 80-degree days, as we know. So many of us noticed the mosquitoes and the flies in the garden because they started to emerge. But it does cut down, you're right, the cold temperature on the insect populations. But then it comes back up, of course.
Well, we had cold weather this week, should we have already been planting tomatoes and peppers?
Well, technically, these warm season crops like tomatoes and peppers, were supposed to go out mid-May. That's normal for New York City. The 51-degree temperature that we had the other evening is a little too cool for those crops. So we'll see the symptoms of that will be that, as I said earlier, flowers will abort off of those vegetables, and you'll have a bit of delay. The plus side is you may have noticed the tulips and the daffodils were lasting quite a long time. The outdoor pansies were lasting a little longer than usual. Because of that cool temperature, a lot of those flowers in the spring that we enjoy so much lasted a little longer.
We're winding up seeing flowers that don't normally bloom at the same time blooming together.
Exactly. And that's a reminder to your listeners. Those of you who have tulips and daffodils, this is the time of month when you want to remove the stalks and the spent flowers off your tulips and your daffodils, but don't remove the leaves because that's the energy for next year's flower.
Now, you brought with you a new cookbook, the New Green Market Cookbook by Gabrielle Langholz. I have a green market right near my house, right. And many of the people who have been there in previous years are not yet showing up because they don't have they don't have crops.
Well, our farmers, yes, that's part of the delay, And in New York City, it's one thing. We're 10 degrees warmer, but some of the outer counties and, the green markets are multiple states. So there were further issues in greenhouses where there was a long, severe winter. A lot of the crops were damaged, and it was very difficult for many of the farmers. Although they're trying to get, their sea legs and they're carrying on. And when you go to the green market, Union Square, or any of the markets around the city, you'll see an enormous variety of vegetables and fruits. And you can talk to the farmers, and the book deals with that. They'll tell you about some of their struggles. You could talk to Trina Pilonero from Silver Heights Farm. She has, I think it's like over 300 types of heirloom tomato plants that you can buy. And Trina will tell you that, she had some struggles through the winter and keeping the greenhouses going and overwintering. And then the spring just wasn't as early as she had hoped it would be because of the weather.
Do you like greenhouse tomatoes? Equally with the tomatoes that are grown outdoors?
No, I love, I've got San Marzanos growing in my backyard, and there's nothing like these heirloom tomatoes that you grow and you eat right off the vine. So now, hopefully it's safe for our tomatoes and they've gotten through those cold periods. We're planting our tomatoes. All our warm season crops are planted. You could do some companion planting. Tomatoes can be planted along with some basil. Think about putting a row.
Also gladiolas, is it?
Or? Yes. And sunflowers, you could consider interplanting things like gladiola corms or the bulbs. Sunflowers in the middle of your vegetable bed, as long as they're to the north and they don't shade your vegetable bed. In the Green Market Cookbook, there's a great kale salad with serrano peppers and mint. And kale is like, the vegetable du jour. Everyone's growing kale. We're making kale chips. We make kale slaw. The recipe in the book is delicious. I've tried it. So we're finding that people are really looking for these kinds of crops. More and more backyard gardeners are growing the more exotic vegetables, and they're looking for places for recipes. So you could find them in the Green Market Cookbook, and you could find these heirloom plants at many of the Green Market farm stands.
My guest is Gerard Lourdal, who is the greening director of Grow NYC. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's go to a call. This is John from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay.
I am having a real problem, as a lot of people up in Austin are having with in the area around here, with hydrangeas. I'm seeing a lot of growth coming from the roots, a lot of fresh leaves at the roots.
Mm-hmm.
But where we deadheaded and trimmed back the old wood last fall, there is I have one hydrangea out of the 10 I think I have around my house. One has buds on them, but they're black and falling off.
Right.
And the other ones have don't even have any buds.
So this is so indicative of the weather and the fluctuations that these plants have gone through. So the recommendation for all the listeners, if you have plants that should be sprouting now and you see this winter dieback, cut it back to where there's some green growth. And if you can't tell from the wood of the stem, like on the hydrangea, scratch it a little with your nail and you'll be able to see some green growth. But cut that back. You know, these plants are pretty resilient and they will come back. You have not lost your hydrangea because it's budding from the bottom. But that's the best way to deal with it. Give it some compost, some organic fertilizer, some manure tea, and that'll help it along.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Sam. Hi, Sam, from where is it? Central Park. Are you the gardener in Central Park?
Not quite. I wish. Just a little bit of a lunchtime walk, I guess. Thanks for taking my call. And I had the same problem with my hydrangeas, too, so I'm glad that was answered. But my other problem that I had, which was more prolific last summer, and I expect it this summer, is my lawn is just filled with probably every morning I wake up, there's, you know, got to be 10 different varieties of mushrooms growing on them, from, you know, these big webs of slime to, you know, caps. And it just, I don't water the lawn at all. It's just, you know, the rain provides all of its hydration. And I don't know if there's any way to tame it, if it's even possible to tame it. And maybe it's not a good idea to tame it. It just, it creates these black, you know, these black patches all over my lawn, and I'm just curious if there's anything I can do about it.
Is there any way for him to know whether these are edible mushrooms or not?
Yeah, you could go
online.
Other
than eating them and surviving or not?
The recommendation is never eat anything. You know, even the mycologists have trouble identifying the poisonous from the non-poisonous, so don't take a chance and eat anything related, you know, in the fungi family, because it could make you sick. But fungi and mushrooms on the lawn, it's because of the acid soil, and all you need to do is adjust the pH of your soil. And we just sprinkle a little lime on top of the mushroom, and the lime is very basic or alkaline in pH, and that will destroy the mushroom. But the bigger picture is to try and adjust the pH of your lawn. The other question is, you know, is the lawn the best use of your property? Maybe you want to go to putting in a rain garden or a perennial garden or an annual. Lawns are so high maintenance at times for some people, and they take a lot of resources and energy. So sprinkle a little lime on the mushroom, and that'll take care of the problem. The bigger issue is having your soil tested for general pH, and you may have a very acidic soil, which is causing the mushrooms, and in that case, you could adjust it by adding some regular garden groundstone lime.
Gerard, we have to go to a little break, but when we come back, we have lots of calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And I also would like to get back to basics sometime during our conversation. If someone has never planted a garden before, what should they do? Right after this. We're back with Gerard Lordahl. He is the director of Grow NYC, the greening director of Grow NYC, which involves community gardens and all sorts of other things, and teaching kids how to grow things in the schools.
Absolutely.
Now, a lot of kids are learning gardening because of these new programs in the schools, but let's say you're like me, and I went to school in a less enlightened time. If I wanted to start a garden, where would I start?
Well, you could go to our website. That's the first place. We spent several winters upgrading our websites over the years, and growtolearn.org is a website that we're very proud of, very comprehensive. It has actual videos of people doing gardening, demonstrations for teachers in classrooms. It has a lot of resource information. So growtolearn.org. We have close to 500 schools registered, and this is the website that they use to learn about teaching classes indoors with kids, to growing a garden outside. And then our general website, GrowNYC, has quite a bit of information as well. If you want to learn how to build a rainwater collection system, go to our GrowNYC website, and you could download the how-to brochure on making a rain garden or building a rainwater catchment system in your garden.
Well, how do you know if the soil is right for planting edible things?
Right. So what you need to do if you're a first gardener is have your soil tested, and there are in our manual that we offer on the website, you could go to Cornell University's hotline, or you could go to their website and send them a sample. There's a nominal fee for sending a sample of soil for analysis. The University of Massachusetts also has a soil testing nutrient analysis lab, and Brooklyn College right here. And all those soil testing locations are on our website, and basically they suggest you take 6 inches, you dig down 6 inches, take out a teaspoon of soil, put it in a baggie, and send it off.
But I'm assuming that most of the soil in backyards here in the city is not good for growing food. It's okay for growing plants, for flowers.
Right.
And then you put good soil that you have to buy at a garden center into a pot and then grow vegetables. Do you think it's better to start with seed, or should just buy some of those plants that are available?
Seed germination can be a little tricky, and now you could get started seedlings fairly easily at all the box stores and many of the garden centers. But going back to soil is critical. So some gardens have people who move into the city may have a backyard garden that was gardened for years organically with no pesticides, and it might be perfectly fine for them to grow a vegetable garden directly in their soil. But you don't want to take the chances. So you want to have your soil tested. When you talk to the researchers and the scientists at Cornell University, they tell you that keeping the soil pH between 6.0 and 6.8 would prevent any of the heavy metals that could be a problem. Cornell recommends if you have small children, you peel root crops that you might be growing in your backyard, especially children who are under 6, or rinse your leafy vegetables off in a 1% vinegar solution before you give them to very small children. And then also to compost. Use as much compost in the garden, because they found that composting improves the soil texture, but it also binds up some of those potential heavy metals.
Let's take some calls. Our next caller is Marie from Manhattan. Hi, Marie.
It's Mario.
Mario, I'm so sorry. Yeah, Mario, now you want to talk about fig trees?
Oh.
Yeah, I want to thank Gerard for doing this, and also for campaigning against lawns, which is not horticulture but chemistry. And I was inspired to buy two fig trees by a walk in Astoria, where you see fig trees in front of people's buildings.
Here's the big question, Mario. Do you wrap your fig tree in the winter? That's the big question.
Here's what happened. They were in pots because they were small. I brought them indoors for the winter, fearing the frost, and they leafed out midwinter. They lost their leaves in the spring. Now they're outdoors, and they're not dead. They have buds, but they're not leafing. So should I replace them?
No, if they're not dead, you could still, you know, maintain them. And you know, you've kind of confused them a little bit by bringing them indoors and out. So give them a break and allow them to survive. You know, grow them outdoors as best you can. Try to get them in the ground. We find that those people who plant figs in New York City against a building, or in some cases in community gardens, they're above subway trains where there's warmth during the winter, they tend to do better. They need to be in full sun. They need to be out of the wind. And it's recommended that you prune them back in the fall and wrap them before the winter, because as we're seeing this year, a lot of people are dealing with severe winter damage or death from their fig trees because of the long winter we had.
Thank you for your call. Rita from Lynbrook. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I enjoy this program tremendously. I have, my husband and I have a place up in the Berkshires, very mountainous. And a couple of years ago, we couldn't do anything other than have a lawn in certain areas. And we had to start, moss accumulated, and it's taken over the entire lawn. What do we do?
Moss? So without seeing this, I'm thinking when you say moss, that's usually in a shady, you know, moss grows on the north side of trees. It grows where it's very wet and damp. You're telling me moss is growing instead of your lawn, which makes me think that there's not a lot of sunlight, that there's not a lot of drainage.
Yes.
Without seeing this, I would say you might want to go in and thatch your lawn and, you know, aerate the soil and try to limb up any trees that are creating a lot of shade and bring more sunlight, and maybe convert this area to a rain garden. If there is a lot of moss, it might be an area that collects a lot of water. So you could grow some beautiful plants in a rain garden, and if it's already a wet area, why not go with the flow of nature and plant cardinal flower and fragrant sumac and American cranberry or meadow phlox and iris in this area? So adjust for new gardeners, as Leonard's asking, you want to do a sun study. You want to make sure you plant in the right place. You want to make sure that the soil is good. You'll have to do some work preparing the soil. If it's very rocky in the Berkshires, you may want to make sure that you amend the soil with compost. And, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. This may be a process that may take you a couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, if it's very spongy, can I just lift it off? Because that's the way it comes off. If I take a rake or cultivator, it just kind of lifts off like a carpet.
Right. Yeah, that's typical of moss. That's just the way it is. It's very light. And, you could put it in a compost heap, and you could adjust and amend that area and make it into a rain garden.
But when she puts it into a compost heap, doesn't she then, when she uses the compost, bring back moss?
But generally it's dried by then. Any good compost should be at least 6 months old. So anything you put on the compost heap is going to die and turn brown and then...
So it's kind of like hay at that point.
Yeah, it would break down substantially. So you want to allow your compost to thoroughly break down for like 3 to 6 months is generally what homeowners will do.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Greening Director of Grow NYC. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Mark, hi, Mark. You're from Park Slope?
Hello? Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I have a question. I've got garden boxes, flower boxes in front of my house on the ground, and every time I plant new flowers in them, especially this year, the squirrels dig through them. And, I mean, in the last couple of days, they've just really destroyed them. And I'm not sure what to do. So,
okay.
If you grow anything with a bulb, they go after them.
Absolutely.
If you're growing things like tomatoes or peppers, squirrels go after after them. Shouldn't they be made illegal instead of ferrets? I mean, Bloomberg made, I think it was ferrets illegal in New York. I would have made squirrels illegal.
Well, they have small brains, but they're not stupid. And squirrels know where the food is put. So we have to be smarter than the deer and the squirrels and all the animals that plague us. I mean, raccoons in the city are pretty popular and pretty common, I should say, not very popular in the garden. So the best protection from them is hardware cloth and metal screening, believe it or not. So if you know you have squirrels that continuously are coming into your containers, you have to plant in such a way that you could use chicken wire or you could use hardware cloth, which is the smaller mesh. And gardeners, community gardeners, backyard gardeners in all five boroughs are used to planting bulbs, particularly tulips and daffodils in the fall, and covering them with this wire mesh. Planter boxes should also be covered if you don't want the squirrels digging in them. I know we thought we had vandalism on my block in Brooklyn, but it was squirrels that were digging in everyone's window boxes on the block. So they can really create a lot of havoc, but using wire mesh will help. That's the best control. Deer are the same thing. The most effective deer control is 8-foot deer fencing. On Staten Island, we're at Gerke Farm, and they have a big problem with groundhogs and raccoons, and their best solution is with fencing and wire mesh.
Of course, if you have nice flowers, the last thing you want to do is put fencing over it or mesh.
Well, you could do it over the container. So he should staple, or he could put his wire mesh on top of the container where the soil is. You could still have your beautiful shrubs, and that will prevent the squirrels and sometimes even the pigeons. You could also go to any of the box stores or the garden center and buy that bird netting. It's very thin, and a lot of times the squirrels are detracted from going in because their feet get tangled, and it doesn't look so bad. It's just this rolled up netting. So that's one thing. The other thing, if you want, you could go to, animal blood. You could buy dried blood, and some gardeners find this effective. Once it's wet, some animals get chased away, and then there are other products on the market that say they can scare animals away, and some people have some success with them and others don't.
And then there are BB guns, Mark. Okay, Cy. Hi, Cy. You're on the air. Cy from New Jersey.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask two questions. One was...
One question per person.
How as a vegetable garden?
She wants to know what's the best way to start a vegetable garden.
Okay, well, just for the advanced gardeners, while we're talking about it, don't forget that in August you should sow a second crop of your cool season vegetables like kohlrabi, broccoli, kale, endive, turnip, cabbage, all those crops that you planted earlier in the spring. Remember that we have about 9 months of good growing season, and you could replant them again. So for your listener, the best thing is to do a sun study. If you're just starting out, make sure you have at least 6 to 12 hours of sunlight where you want to grow your vegetables. Your shaded vegetables like your parsley and your leafy vegetables like lettuce and cilantro, those can go in the shaded area that you may only have 6 hours of direct sunlight. Your fruiting vegetables like tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, squash, the melons, watermelon, they need at least 12 hours of sunlight, between 10 and 12. Your rooting crops, 8 to 12 hours of sunlight a day. So do a sun study first. Don't put a vegetable garden where you don't have sufficient sun. Then your soil is so important. Make sure your soil has the correct pH. You could bring it to any cooperative extension agent, or you could buy a pH kit and test it yourself, or you could send us samples and we could sample your pH simply in the office.
Or you can buy soil.
You could buy soil from the garden center, and you could bring in fresh topsoil or bagged soil in containers, as many of us garden in. And then you want to select plants that are appropriate for your soil and for the sunshine that you have. You could do annuals, which survive just through the year, or perennials, which have a winter root system that comes back year after year.
Some people like to grow flowers that they can then cut and put in their own bouquets.
Yes, and a good friend of mine, Charlie Mazza from Cornell University, he has a good publication on site assessment. If you're first starting out with a garden, Charlie Mazza and his publication, you could find it on Cornell's website. It talks about how you assess your property and figure out the best kind of garden for your situation. So that's what I would say for the beginning gardeners. Figure out what your garden is best appropriate for.
Charlie from Brooklyn, your garden is on a rooftop?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, my garden is on a rooftop. I've got about 15 kale plants that I've been nurturing for the last 2 months, and they're looking beautiful. I finally got them out of containers and into a large planter box. Mm-hmm. I put them in the in probably the most direct sun, thinking that was what it was gonna need. And now I'm hearing maybe I needed to give it a little more shade. I'm getting little brown spots on the leaves. I've got Lassitano kale and the curly kale, the one with the spikes on the leaves.
All right. Well, I have Lassitano kale that's very common, a dinosaur kale, they call it. I have it growing on a Bronx rooftop in full sun, and it's doing really well. My question to you is, how's your watering regimen? You know, brown spots on the leaves, if you do overhead watering, which I discourage, you want to do thorough soaking of the soil, and you want to mulch the soil. It's possible the brown spots are from your light sprinkling of water. If you use an overhead sprinkler and you don't sufficiently water the roots, you could get that brown spot. But Lassitano kale is doing really well in full sun on our Bronx rooftop garden on the fifth floor. So the other thing, it could be a disease. You want to make sure you cultivate the month of June. You know, cultivating the soil will help remove some of the pests and the weeds and the diseases. Also, as I said, putting down a mulch will conserve the water, keep the weeds down, and that will help control some of your pests. But maybe it's your watering of the kale, not so much the sunlight that it's getting, but make sure it stays thoroughly moist. We put down a layer of mulch, and you might be better off.
Gerard, we're running out of time, but I wanted to mention that you have a fundraiser coming up on June 10th.
Right. Well, the New York City Community Garden Coalition, which I'm a member of, is having a fundraiser. And if you're a New York City gardener and you'd like to become a member of the New York City Community Garden Coalition, they're having a fundraiser. And you could check it out on their website, NYCCCGC, New York City Community Garden Coalition.org. And it would be great if you'd like to get more involved in community gardens or gardening in general. It's a great group, and they've been around since like 1997, fighting for community gardens and public open space.
And we have a link on our show page at WNYC.org if you want more details. We got lots of great calls, and we couldn't get to all of them. What about those desperate people who weren't able to get on the air?
For all of the desperate listeners who weren't able to get on, there's a real wealth of information on our website. If you'd like to find out where you could buy the Green Market Cookbook, or if you'd like to download the Community Garden Guide for Resilient New York City Gardens, you can go to our website at www.grownyc.org. And then if you're an educator, you could also go to our school garden website, www.growtolearn.org, and find all things about school gardening in general.
And we didn't even get to window boxes, but
there's a lot of information. It's basically a container garden. And people could send me information at my email, glordahl@grownyc.org. And as a public information organization, we'd be happy to give you some help.
And Lordahl is spelled L-O-R-D-A-H-L. Gerard Lordahl is the greening director of Grow NYC. And Gerard, thank you so much for being with us.
It's always fun being here, Leonard. Thank you. Happy spring.